Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Esprit.net News.
I want to get the language right tonight.
This is America. The president is back.
Never let anybody tell you that your efforts don't matter.
This is not a war zone. These are unarmed people.
Politicians and commentators.
Don't let anybody take your man.
Does that remind you that I've done this before?
It doesn't make you tough to hurt these people.
You have tuned into Independent Thought Radio, where we cover world and national news with current affairs. Some good, some bad, but it's all the news you need to know. I'm your host, Jerome Esprit, bringing you straight talk outside the headlines. So sit back and relax, call in, or hit us up in chat. Now, as long as you're ready, we're ready. Welcome again to Esprit.net News. I'm your host, Jerome. On this program, Cuba went into overdrive to honor the retired El Comandante Fidel Castro, who passed away this past week. President Obama lights the White House Christmas tree, and Tiger Woods is back. He teed off for the first time in 15 months in a competition as he starts his, I guess it's called the Herald World Challenge, and federal judges in North Carolina ordered North Carolina to redraw legislative district lines. That's right. The redistricting is on the table. And cops who shot dead an unarmed black man in Oklahoma will stand trial for manslaughter. We have that this week in court and much more. But I want to welcome you again onto Esprit.net News. And want to remind you that our call-in number tonight is 909-265-9189 if you're calling. And if you're calling in live, if you're listening to the archives, hey, that's the number you want to call in on Thursdays if you want to check out the show. Now, our first story, forecasts expect a record-setting cold weather that's plaguing Alaska right now to spread across the United States in the coming week. Low temperatures have already set Alaska records, which is, I guess, is witnessing its coldest weather in almost 2 years. Just this week, temperatures in Fairbanks reached a minus 31 degrees, ending a 664-day stretch of warm weather. Now forecasters expect the record-setting weather may spread, you know, across most of the country. They also have a record breaking of, I guess it's a minus 41 degrees somewhere else in Alaska. So we're expecting to have that weather in other parts of the country. Okay, so get your winter coats out. Now, the strong consumer spending helped the U.S. economy to grow faster than previously estimated in the third quarter. Now, the world's largest economy grew at an annualized rate of 2.3% in the 3 months to September, up from an earlier estimate of 2.9%. So if you don't know, the GDP figure is a measure of the goods and services produced across the United States economy. So just wanted to make sure I put that in. There's a news story saying the lack of sleep is costing the U.S. economy up to $441 billion a year, is what this new report is claiming. It says that America to suffer the most from a tired workforce, losing just over 1.2 million working days a year to exhaustion, and either from workers taking days off or just not performing in their prime. That's just a study that's out, so just thought I throw that in for good measure. Now, in world news, Cuba went into overdrive to honor the retired El Comandante Fidel Castro, who passed away on November 25th. Now, in August, he celebrated his 90th birthday. Now, the White House released a statement on Saturday morning that said the U.S. and Cuba has been marked by discord and profound political disagreements for nearly six decades. President Obama said that history will record and judge the enormous impact that Castro had on people and the world around him. He said, during my presidency, we have worked hard to put the past behind us, pursuing a future in which the relationship between our two countries is defined not by our differences, but by the many things that we share as neighbors and friends, bonds of family, culture, commerce, and common humanity. Now, today we offer our condolences to Fidel Castro's family and said that our thoughts and prayers are with the Cuban people. Now, I know that's been taken under fire, but we're not going to deal with that today. That was the president's statement. And also, in Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said that Castro was a remarkable leader who made significant improvements to education, healthcare of his island nation, and was rewarded with the deep, lasting affection of Cubans. Now, although no leader is without their flaws, we must push back against the rhetoric of the right, and come to the defense of El Comandante, is what the Black Lives Matter movement said. They wrote a byline in an article called The Lessons from Fidel, and that's the name of the byline. I'm not sure who wrote that, but it was officially from the Black Lives Matter movement is how the byline described it. Now, the presidents of Venezuela, Bolivia, Mexico, they all lined up to pay tribute to Castro, whose death has sent the island nation to a state of mourning. So the President Obama will not attend. He is sending the U.S. Ambassador Jeffrey De Laurentiis and Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes. They went to the rally this weekend already. South African President Jacob Zuma and Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro also spoke at that rally earlier this week, and people like Danny Glover was also there in the crowd. And I just want to say this, as far as that perspective is concerned, is that, you know, there are a lot of people who are mourning in Cuba, and so we want to send out our respect to the Cuban people. Now, I know that this has been a big controversy, so I'm going to throw my two cents in here. I don't really like to do that normally on the news, but I will, because the white Cubans in Florida are having a problem, I have not seen any coverage to explain why those Cubans are so upset with Castro but wasn't upset about the horrific dictator of Batista that they had before Castro got there. So when black people were being persecuted on the island nation, I don't think the Cubans that are there now who are complaining about Castro cared that the black folks were being persecuted prior to them getting there. Just wanted to throw that out there. So if you can check that out in the news, feel free to email your comments to us, because I have not seen it. So if somebody's reported on that, just kind of let's put that out there. Now, Fidel Castro's ashes began a four-day journey across Cuba on Wednesday from Havana to their final resting place in the eastern city of Santiago. It's a small Cuban flag covered the cedar coffin that contains the remains of the 90-year-old leader. It was taken out of Cuba's defense ministry just after 7 a.m., placed into flower bed trailer that was pulled by a green military jeep for more than 500 miles in procession. The ashes will be interned this Sunday, ending a nine-day mourning period for the man who ruled the country for more than 50 years. Now, if you don't know much about Cuba, let me tell you that you can check out the letters from Cuba written by the attorney Alisa Campbell, my girl. I want to say, so go to solosyracuse.com, check out her article. When she was in undergrad, she spent 6 months there, and it is a really great series of articles. It's, I think it's six of them. So if you want to go check that out and learn what an American's life was in Cuba, just go check that out. But you want to go check that out on SolarSyracuse.com. So here's some history. President Castro's rebels took power from dictator, I can't remember his first name, Batista, who fled Cuba on January 1st, 1959. The U.S. soon recognized the new government. In 1960, Cuba normalized they nationalized U.S.-owned oil refineries after they refused to process Soviet oil. Then the U.S. government imposed a trade embargo banning virtually all U.S. exports to the island except for food, medicine, and severed diplomatic ties in 1961. Now, Castro was the target of more than 630 assassination plots by militant Cuban exiles or the U.S. government. President Jimmy Carter reestablished diplomatic missions and negotiated the release of thousands of prisoners after he took office in 1977, but the election of Ronald Reagan ended that reapproachment. He cut all ties again. President Obama's administration officially removed Cuba from the U.S. terrorism blacklist, and relations between the two countries were fully restored on July 20, 2015. 1 month later, John Kerry, the U.S. Secretary of State, flew to Havana, becoming the first U.S. Secretary of State to visit the country since 1945. In February 2013, his brother, the current president, Raul Castro, announced that he would retire as president in 2018 and named newly minted Vice President Miguel Diaz-Canel as his successor. Now, that rounds out my quick history for Cuba, but I want to end this segment just on a couple of quotes from Fidel Castro, and without going to the history of Malcolm X visiting him and Muhammad Ali and all of the people who have gone to Cuba that were black Americans, where they couldn't find any safety in the Western Hemisphere, went to Cuba. The work that they've done with South Africa by sending military there during apartheid to help protect some of the people there. And that's why Nelson Mandela was pretty close with Cuba, because once he became president, the only people who were sustaining them with of any kind of support was nations like Cuba. So just wanted to make sure I gave that respect to the work that they've done as far as people of color across the globe, but specifically in the U.S. for the people who actually have gone to Cuba, and from the stories that I've heard and from some stories that I've heard from actual Cubans who still live there, that the media coverage on this end has been totally skewed, and I want to make sure that we did it some justice on this program. Now, here's some quotes from Castro. He said, "I began the revolution with 82 men. If I had to do it again, I would do it with 10 or 15, and absolute faith." He said that it doesn't matter how small you are if you have faith and a plan of action. He said that in 1959. He also said, "A revolution is not a bed of roses. A revolution is a struggle between the future and the past." And he also said that, "I am really happy to reach 80. I never expected it, not least having a neighbor, the greatest power in the world, trying to kill me every day." That's what he said in 2006. And he said, "One of the greatest benefits of the revolution is that our prostitutes our college graduates." He said that in 2003. So, hey, there you go. The president, former president of Cuba. Now, this week, a federal grand jury ordered a Houston mortgage lender and CEO to pay the federal government $93 million for fraudulently issuing thousands of federally insured loans that fell into debt. So, the jury is going to, the U.S. is going to receive more money because of mortgage lender issues hopefully we don't go back to that stuff. Now, a plane-carrying Brazilian soccer team heading for the biggest game in their history crashed in Colombia on Tuesday, killing 75 of the 81 passengers aboard. I'm not going to go too much more into the story because I know it's been covered. So just want to make sure you knew, just in case you didn't. President Barack Obama leaves office with the highest approval ratings in 4 years at 55%. Now, this is with a Quinnipiac, I can never say that name right, university survey released Monday says, now, a majority of respondents called the president a great or a good president. The poll noted both Democrats and Republican parties had negative favorability ratings, but the president's ratings are pretty high. Now, the president has also commuted the prison sentences of 79 more people, bringing his grand total to more than 1,000. President Obama has been commuting sentences for months, believing many U.S. inmates are serving inappropriately long terms for nonviolent crimes, typically drug offenses. The commutations are part of the president's Second Chance Initiative, in which has now commuted more than 1,023 individuals, and the president is expected to grant more in his remaining weeks of his administration. The president has granted more commutations of prisoners in the past than the past 11 presidents combined. So I want to make sure we put that out there, and hopefully, hear me on the not the commutation part, but the parting side of this, Assad is secure. Just want to put that out there. Marcus Garvey, just put that out there. And Momia Abu Jamal, just want to put that out there. All right, now the First Lady, Michelle Obama, welcomed families of the U.S. service members to the White House on Tuesday for an early view of this year's presidential holiday decorations. Now, the official White House Christmas tree was accepted by the Obamas on Friday, and she welcomed military families as a part of the Joining Forces Initiative, which aimed to ensure that service members, veterans, and their families have the tools they need to succeed throughout their lives. She said, thank you to all of those volunteers who traveled here from 33 states, D.C., and Puerto Rico to come here and put these beautiful decorations and transform this White House into the holiday wonderland. Mrs. Obama said in her opening remarks, she said, as we celebrate our family's last holiday season in the White House, I'm thinking back to when we first came here to Washington and we promised to open up this house to as many people from as many backgrounds as possible. On behalf of the entire Obama family, me, Barack, Malia, Sasha, and Grandma, Bo, and Sonny, we're proud to have this team here, so proud of the time that we've spent with you, so grateful for everything that you've done for us. And the First Lady added just as she ended, before I get choked up, let me just officially kick off the White House holiday season. So, you know, it's starting to kick in. We have less than a month we have just over a month left in their term. So I'm not rushing them, knowing that crazy is coming along the way. So I just wanted to share that part. Now, President Obama lit the national Christmas tree at the White House for the 8th and final time as president today. The president was joined by his wife, Michelle, and younger daughter, Sasha, who's 15. Didn't realize that 8 years go so fast, for the 94th annual National Christmas Tree Lighting on the ellipse. It's the public park located on south of the White House fence. Now, the Olympic gold medalist Simone Manuel joined the First Lady to read "'Twas a Night Before Christmas" to a group of children who got front row seats on the stage. So I wanted to say that because I was surprised to see her there, but I'm glad Simone Manuel, who has not been getting a lot of press since the Olympics, I'm glad she was able to do that. The National Christmas Tree Lighting Ceremony has a 93-year-old history that began with President Calvin Coolidge. He lit a 48-foot fir tree, sparkling with 2,500 electric bulbs So just wanted to say that. But if you missed it, the show will be broadcast on the Hallmark Channel on December 5th. So they recorded it for a later broadcast, which is on the 5th next week. And but it just happened today. So just wanted to put that out there. I want to remind you, you're listening to S3Net News. You can call in and join us at 909-265-9189. I want to say hey to everyone who's on the line. And if you ever want to come in and join the program, just hit 1 on the line, and I will bring you in. I want to say hey to Kathleen, who is en route. I'm not sure if she's going to be in while she's in transit, but hey, Kathleen and Kai. And by the way, I want to say today is the birthday of, I'm going to call them the trilogy because this would be one of those days. And there's a couple of other days like this where I have three good friends whose birthdays on the same day. So the, I want to say the co-founder of this program, Lucy Sanchez Abreu. In case you're listening, happy birthday, Lucy. I always think about you on the first. And my girl, Christo. I want to say, hey, Christo, happy birthday. And my brother, Carl Sims, happy birthday, Carl. All right. Now, the Obama administration today, I just wanted to go back into some somber news, has banned smoking from all public housing in a bid to save $153 million a year in repairs, preventable fires, and health care costs. Now, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention says that the smoke-free policy will save housing agencies $153 million every year. I'm not sure I agree with this and not really cool with this. Now, I think we're going a little bit overboard. I know the president was a smoker or is one, but I don't know how I feel about that. But that has just come down the pike today that in any federal housing that they're going to ban smoking. Or it has been banned. Okay. Now, the U.S. federal court said on Tuesday it set a March 15 deadline for North Carolina state lawmakers to redraw legislative districts found to be racially gerrymandered and ordered a new round of elections by next November for the 28 seats at stake. Now, in August, the same special three-judge panel ruled that 9 state Senate districts and 19 state House districts as carved out in a plan adopted by the Republican-controlled legislature in 2011 were unconstitutional. So the panel had told North Carolina's legislature to start revamping its political map immediately, but left the existing boundaries intact for the November 8th election, because they said of time constraints, which makes me believe that somebody probably wouldn't have won. Well, maybe they would have won the state, but anyway. And a separate three-judge U.S. court panel ruled in a similar case a week ago that the state assembly districts in Wisconsin has redrawn by its Republican-led legislature was also unconstitutional. It was unconstitutionally gerrymandered as well. Now, it also requires the state to hold a special primary and general elections in the late summer and fall of 2017 to fill those 29 House and Senate seats. So it looks like they plan on appealing this, of course, but twice North Carolina is found to be responsible for racially gerrymandering their districts, and Wisconsin, all in a week. Now, Uganda's high court has ordered the closure of schools funded in part by billionaire Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg by December 8th because they are unsanitary and unqualified. Now, in a November 4th ruling by Uganda's top court, Bridge International Academies was ordered to close because they risk the life and safety of its 12,000 students. The chain, in a subsequent court order, was allowed to stay open until the third term ends. The Bridge Academy is also, is a chain of private schools in Uganda, Kenya, and Nigeria. Now, the schools provide a Western education with tablets, computers for about $6 a month of tuition, but the chain also runs about 400 nurseries across Africa. I have a lot to say about this, but I am not going to say it, but I just want to remind you, you can send your questions and comments to news@soulofsyracuse.com. I really, really don't know what to think about this, but I don't have anything nice to say about it, so I'm just going to keep going on with the news. All right. Dolly Parton will give $6,000 to every family who lost their home in wildfires which hit her hometown. Now, the iconic singer, who's 70, has vowed to dip into her hands into her own pockets to help displace those displaced by the wildfires in Tennessee by paying them $1,000 a month for the first 6 months. Now, I have to say, you know what? Shout out to Dolly Parton. And, you know, that Whitney Houston remake is bringing them some royalties, but she is going to give $6,000 to every family who lost their home. There you go. All right. Now, Carnival's Princess, it will be paying a record $40 million penalty, and they pled guilty to 7 felony charges for illegally dumping oil-contaminated waste into the ocean and trying to cover it up. So, Carnival, they are busted. So, they agreed to pay $40 million. We'll see how that goes and if somebody doesn't let them off on the next administration, but I digress. Now, the death rate amongst Caucasian Americans outstripped the birth rate in 17 states in 2014 compared to just 4 in 2004. Now, the University of New Hampshire has just released this in a study. While Latinos, Blacks, and Asian populations continue to grow, soaring death rates among white middle-aged Americans combined with the fact that white families are having less children mean certain states are sending failing Caucasian populations. Now, white Americans are reportedly dying faster thanks to a silent epidemic, is what they're saying, of death from suicides, drugs, and alcohol poisoning. Now, the trend, which affects both rural and desert areas such as Nevada and Arizona, to states with large metropolitan areas such as California, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania. Now, this has already begun to shake up America's demographics. Meanwhile, death rates for Blacks and Hispanic men and women in rural areas have fallen. Now, Dr. Case and Dr. Denton, they led the study. They added that it's not reflected amongst African Americans or Hispanics within the U.S. They estimate that it had the white morality, and let's see, this is where I got stuck on it. White morality in the U.S. rates, if they held to the 1998 value, that 96,000 lives would have been saved between 1998 and 2013. For those with high school degrees or less, death caused by drugs and alcohol poisoning rose fourfold. Suicides increased 81%, and deaths caused by liver damage and cirrhosis jumped 50%. All-cause mortality all-cause mortality rose by 22% for the least educated group. So here we go. Just wanted to put that story out there. I don't know why this was such a big study, but in the world of news this week, this actually came out and nobody's reporting on it. So there you have it. So along with that theory, Florida mom, 27, is indicted on charges of murdering her one-year-old daughter using a string of Halloween lights and blaming it on her son, aged just 2. The Florida mom, Kristen DePasquale, was indicted on murder charges after cops said that she strangled her one-year-old daughter with the Halloween lights and blamed her two-year-old son. Now, a convicted rapist, 72, is sentenced to 520 years in prison for sexually assaulting a 9-year-old family member that he was babysitting. So John Wetzel of California was convicted in October for 4 counts of each lewd act upon the child and some other stuff. And the child, while it's a child of 10 years of age or younger, is the charge. I just didn't want to read the details of that. Now, a decorated Marine colonel, 55, is charged with sexually abusing a 6-year-old child. Now, Colonel Daniel Wilson, 55, based in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, has been charged with sexually abusing a child, assaulting a child under the age of 16, and conducting unbecoming of an officer. All right, now, an emotional Nicole Wilfinger, 37, learned her fate Wednesday when a Las Vegas judge sentenced her to 28 to 72 months in prison on charges of statutory sexual seduction and sexual conduct with a student, according to the arrest report. The former 8th grade teacher at Molesky Junior High School kept a journal on her cell phone that detailed her relationship with a teenage boy. Now, the only reason I'm doing this story is because I read some of the notes that was on her cell phone, like on whatever date I fell in love with this teenager, and on April 2nd, he dressed up like a cowboy. Like, she wrote in detail her relationship with him, and she sobbed in court. I don't know if that helped, but she did get 28 to 72 months. I guess that was her trying to play to the judge. All right. Now, health officials released news Tuesday as a part of a call for more use of needle exchange programs. The CDC report comes as the nation is facing an ongoing epidemic of opioid and heroin use that has led to an increase of drug overdoses, particularly amongst white people. This is not me adding this. This is the news. Now, until recently, HIV cases in injection drug users have been failing for all racial groups. Cases are still falling in black and Hispanics, but for whites, they have stopped falling in 2012. Nearly half of white injection drug users share needles with other addicts. That's in 2015, compared with a third of Hispanic and a fifth of black. So the CDC previously reported the rise of new hepatitis C infections, which is tied largely to injections. So again, in a week where white folks news, they're having really bad news, but along with the 17 states of low birth rates, and this is the first year that Europeans are having negative birth rates all over the place. Now, we can see why our opioid crisis is in effect, is because it is affecting one group more than the other, and that other group is not a group of color. Just wanted to put that out there for the record. Now, a Vermont couple has been found passed out, speaking of drug abuse, has been found passed out from heroin overdose in a car with two young children after driving 3 hours from home to score drugs. Now, Tamara Bruce, who's 32, and Jacob Davis, who's 27, were arrested in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and charged with child endangerment after allegedly overdosing in front of their two kids. Now, Hamilton County, Ohio, officials said that two more judges disqualified themselves from the murder trial of former Cincinnati police officer Ray Tinzing on Tuesday. Now, a mistrial was declared on November 12th, and Tinzing's trial over the death of 43-year-old Sam Du Bois after jurors could not agree on a verdict. Now, Hamilton County prosecutor said that he was going to have a retrial last Tuesday, and early Tuesday, Judge Tom Heakin was appointed on Monday, removed himself due to a conflict of interest because he served as a guardian and a litem ad litem, I guess, for one of Du Bois' children during the probate process, and Hamilton County Judge Beth Myers then briefly obtained the case on Tuesday, but she filed the disqualification papers almost immediately. The first judge, Megan Shanahan, removed herself from the retrial, citing a desire to give the case a blank slate. So, again, this is the fourth judge to remove themselves from a case involving a police officer, which kind of tells me that we have a problem in this country where our judges, in the illusion of impartiality in these cases, and it kind of makes sense why police officers, when they opt out of a jury trial and let a judge decide it, that they are getting off charges because of the conflicts that judges are having. So these judges, luckily, I mean, we're four so far, are saying that there is a conflict. So they're disqualifying themselves, luckily. All right, now, the Tulsa police officer who shot and killed an unarmed black man was ordered by a judge Tuesday to stand trial after declining that there was enough evidence, or after deciding that there was enough evidence to for her to do so. So Judge Deborah Leach told the Tulsa officer Betty Shelby during the pretrial hearing that the police helicopter and dash cam video evidence is enough for her to stand trial for shooting Terrence Crutcher during the traffic stop in September. Now, on September 16, if you don't remember, Shelby saw Crutcher's SUV parked in the middle of a two-lane highway. After getting out of the car, they said that he ignored most of the instructions that Shelby gave him and started moving towards the car. When he appeared to be about to reach into the open window of SUV, Shelby shot him. Now, the window was not open, according to the footage from the video. I don't know why they keep leaving that narrative, but the window wasn't open, and he put his hands on top of the roof, and she shot him. So Shelby's next hearing is scheduled for December 15th, and we'll keep an eye on this news story as well to see, you know, where this is going to go. Now, former North Charleston, South Carolina police officer Michael Slager, accused of fatally shooting Walter Scott on Tuesday. During his testimony, he said that he made the decision to use deadly force before Scott began running away. So on Tuesday, Slager, who has used the taser 13 out of 18 use of forces incidences over the last 4 years, said that Scott remained a threat to his life, even though Scott was 18 feet away when he was running. So Slager also said the prosecution's comment that Scott never at any point had any kind of tactical advantage over you at all. Slager said that was correct. So he didn't have any advantage and you still shot him. Slager said that he had not received de-escalation training prior to the incident with Scott. I don't know if that's a good defense, but he didn't know how to de-escalate the situation. Now, the former officer said that things could have been different with the benefit of hindsight after seeing the video of the shooting. So he's saying now that he saw the video, he did some things wrong. So that would be the guy from North Charleston. I just wanted to put that out there. All right. Again, I want to remind you, you're listening to Esprinet News. You can call in and join us. I am going to go on and do a little bit of court, some news this week in court. But I just want to remind you, you can check us out on Thursdays, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to check us out through our RSS feed, you know, if on your tablet or on your phone, you can easily go to BTR, look up Esprit Radio, use their fees, or you can go to espyradio.soulofsyracuse.com and get the RSS feed information from there and plug that into your tablet, and you can get these downloads. Don't have to wait for us to post them on social media, and they will just download to your phone if you want to see them. All right, so just thought I'd put that out there. And remember our dialing number, 909-265-9189, if you want to call in and join us. And for everyone online, thanks for joining us. And hit one if you want to come in at the program at any time. We have plenty of news left, so if you don't, that's cool. Now, a man who donated sperm to a lesbian couple for $50 so that they can have a baby is not legally the child's father and does not need to provide financial support, is what a judge has ruled. Now, the ruling was handed down by Shawnee County District Judge Mary Matavi in Kansas last week, and the case of a Topeka man, William Murata. Now, the Department of Children and Family has been trying to force Murata to pay child support after he donated his sperm to a couple in 2009. The couple had their child in December of the same year, but have since separated. So that's when they wanted to, you know, go back and pretty much, I don't know, sue him for child support. Now, a North Carolina man pled guilty to plotting a U.S. terrorist attack with a member of the Islamic State that could have killed 1,000 people. So Justin Noel Sullivan, 20, pled guilty in federal court in North Carolina on Tuesday after he plotted to carry out a terrorism attack at a concert or a club where he believed as many as 1,000 people will die. Now, a Maryland father, 24, pled guilty to sexually abusing and killing his 10-week-old daughter by repeatedly dropping the baby and breaking her bones. Now, Robert Davidson, 24, has pled guilty to sex abuse of a minor and first-degree child abuse resulting into the death on June 2015, slaying of his baby daughter, Aaliyah Thompson. Now, let me go into this week in court, because I know I missed this segment, so I just want to give you some stuff that's going on in court that I may have missed from before. Now, following California's Election Day approval of a proposition to keep the death penalty and speed executions, the ACLU has sued the state, claiming that Proposition 66 gives unelected officials unbridled discretion over executions. Okay, so there we have it. And two Florida marketing firms must pay $14.3 million for selling customer information to a payday lender that scammed $43 million from victims, is what a federal judge ruled. And the feds, they have canceled an energy leases, good Lord, in Blackfeet tribal lands. Now, more than 30 years, Devon Energy will get a refund on money it paid for oil and gas leases in Montana following the federal government's decision on Wednesday to cancel those leases. So want to make sure I put those out there in case I missed it from the last time. Now, a father who was accidentally locked in a minimum security prison cell for more than a day with no toilet, food, or water while visiting his son was awarded $600,000. Now, Fareed Polk was visiting his son at the Cook County Jail in Chicago when he found himself locked in a small room for 32 hours with no toilet, water, or food. He was rescued by a fire department when he was able to break open a sprinkler head. But even then, they handcuffed and questioned him because he broke the sprinkler. Now, he was awarded $600,000, and I say, you know, they leave people in jail for a long amount of time and try not to give him that kind of money. But I'm glad he won, and I hope they don't appeal that. Now, Congolese, that's people from the Congo, a hairstylist from the Congo, was disappointed with all the black dye options available. She said none of which had natural feeling hair. The mother too, who is on WeTV's Cutting It in the ATL, got to work and created her own toy. It's called My Natural Doll. And so the name Kalishi, the doll has 100% virgin hair that feels authentic. I don't know what that means exactly. I'm just doing the news. She explained that this isn't just about the toys. It's about giving young girls something that will make them feel beautiful and love themselves. The dolls are currently available for Christmas pre-order. And get this, they're $145. I know, sounds a little crazy, but they're $145, just in case you wanted to know. All right, now, in other news, more than 140 civil rights organizations signed an open letter delivered to the U.S. Senate on Thursday, urging it to reject Alabama's Senator Jeff Sessions as the president-elect Donald Trump's choice for attorney general. And we don't have enough time in this show, and I will cover them later once the confirmation hearings kick in, of all of the racist stuff that Jeff Sessions have done or said over the years. But we will do that at some point. Now, French President François Hollande has announced today that he would not seek a second term in next year's presidential election, saying that he hoped to give his Socialist Party a chance to win against conservatism and extremism by stepping aside. Now, I don't know what that means. Oh, I do know what that means. Again, in watching the U.S. elections, you saw a very flawed candidate, Hillary Clinton, lose to somebody who was conservative and an extremist. And although, as they're certifying votes right now, Hillary Clinton is up 2,550,000 votes. This is interesting because they're still going through the process of possibly recounting in some of the states. Now, she lost Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania by less than 1% of the vote. And they're trying to do a recount. So we're going to see how that goes. But France's president is not returning because of the climate, I guess, is the only way that we can kind of call this. All right, now, hundreds of nude photos sent by desperate women to online loan sharks as guarantees were leaked. The naked pictures of over 1,000 women were shared in China this week. Most of the victims were students aged between 19 and 23 years old. It remains unknown who leaked the photos, but police have been alerted. Now, I know this is in China and not in the U.S., but if you're going to leave a nude picture as collateral, you might want to pay your outstanding debts. I just wanted to put that out there. Now, not vouching for loan sharks or anything, but I'm just saying, you know, just as a policy, you don't want that stuff floating out there too much. Now, you know, Hank and Helen Kowalski, 88 and 87 of Thousand Oaks, California, are being forced out of their homes because their grandson sold it without telling them, is what they're saying. They have been forced to file a lawsuit against their grandson, who is currently not facing any criminal charges, and the couple who has 5 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren, say that they are heartbroken that one of their beloved grandsons, who they call a treasured child, has done this to them. And they said, I don't think that it's my grandson. I didn't think my grandson would do that to me, is what Helen said. He would be the last person. There you have it. You might want to put some other stuff in writing when you start leaving stuff to your grandkids, because apparently they're too far removed to to keep your wishes. I guess he thought he could keep a secret, but apparently he sold it right up under them. All right. Now, I just want to remind you, you're listening to Esprinet News. You can check us out every Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to check out our news program. We're here live to bring you a weekly news wrap-up of everything that's going on in the world. And if you want to send us some news, just send it to news@soulofsyracuse.com. We'll check it out there. If you had some questions or comment, you can always put it in the chat room. You know, we'll make a decision on the fly and see if we need to do something about that and put it out there. So I just wanted to thank you for joining in and checking out this program. We'll be back again next week. I want to say we will definitely see you again next week on the program. So for me and my colleagues, and happy birthday to all of those guys who I missed, I want to say we'll see you again next week. Thanks for tuning in to Esprinet News.